Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome in to the noon hour here on Darren Donick Chase and D Mace right here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick and Derek Mason here with you from Bridgestone Arena, downtown Nashville. The Predators in action tonight against the Anaheim Ducks. Another game in a very, very important week for the Preds as they try to maintain one of those eight playoff spots in the Western Conference. Some other big games going on tonight as well. It's every night you're checking the scoreboard. Edmonton wins last night in dramatic fashion in overtime over Peter Laviolette and the Capitals. Vancouver is pushing from down deep in the standings, trying to get up in contention before the trading deadline. They won last night in the TNT game. Tonight, Minnesota, who the Predators play on Sunday, is in Detroit to take on the Red Wings. Red Wings much more dangerous at home than on the road, but the Wild trying to get their stuff straight. They had lost 8 out of 10 before the other day. So all kinds of big games tonight. The New York Rangers are in St. Louis tonight to take on the Blues. That's a big one. And the Sharks are in L.A. to take on the Kings, who have played tremendous hockey. So all kinds of big games in hockey tonight. That's the March Madness NHL style. Meanwhile, in the SEC tournament, they're underway in the second half down in Tampa, where the Lightning play normally, so you know the Lightning are on the road. Texas A&M leads Florida 35-25 in a game between sort of low bubble teams, teams that are trying to make a miraculous run to get back in contention. A good first half for the Aggies in that one. So, D-Mace, the big story of the day, I would have to say, from the Titans' perspective, is that they are going to cut Roger Saffold. I don't think anybody is totally shocked about that, especially after they signed Harold Landry. You knew some tough decisions had to be made. So Saffold, his days as a Titan, look like they're going to be over unless somehow he comes back for an unbelievably low deal, which I can't foresee going to be. I think they're going to move on from him. But he was a pretty good free agent signing when it comes right down to it. They got good mileage out of him, I thought.
Yeah, they did. And they had to pay a premium to get him because I think at the time he was one of the top free agents, at least guards, offensive linemen, during that period. So they had to pay to get him. He was coming from the NFC, right?
Came from the Rams.
Yeah, the Rams. Right? And I think that was right after the Rams, the first Super Bowl, right? Yeah, it was right after their first Super Bowl. Not first Super Bowl win.
I'm trying to remember the timeline of that.
When they went to the Super Bowl and ended up losing. And he was one of the marquee offensive linemen that were in free agency that year. But like you said, Willie, they got good mileage on him. He was productive. He was a part of an offensive line that had a 2,000-yard rusher in Derrick Henry. And honestly, Derrick Henry was on pace again to get another 2,000 yards and possibly even break the single-season record had he not got injured. So from a run-blocking standpoint, he was what they needed. He also was with the Rams when they were rushing for a bunch of yards, you know, on their way to the Super Bowl, I believe.
I'm trying to think of the years he was there, but it, I feel like Todd Gurley's prime is when Saffold might have been a part of that as he came on. We'll have to look at the timeline there. We're also going to talk to John Clayton at 12:30, the bottom of the hour. John Clayton always connected with some of these doings in the NFL. We'll get his read on what's been happening. And then at 1 o'clock, Elliot Friedman, the best in the business when it comes to NHL talk around the league with the trade deadline coming up on March the 18th. The calendar's moving. The calendar's moving. Stuff is happening. There still hasn't been one big trade to start the dominoes going in the NHL. That was another thing that came out of our David Poile interview 2 days ago that David Poile said. He goes, you know, take a look around. Nobody's making any trades right now. Nobody. So what's going to shake that loose? There's a lot of teams right up against the cap. We'll hit Elliott with that. Back to the offensive line situation now. Derek, remember last week we were talking about Dylan Radins. We had some really good – it was the day that Mike Vrabel and John Robinson spoke. We had a guest on, and why am I blanking? You guys are going to have to help me. The gentleman that runs
– Jim Nagy.
The Combine – The Senior Bowl. Jim Nagy, yeah. Had some great things to say about Dylan Raidens, and he really thinks that Dylan Raidens can turn into an excellent player. You heard Mike Vrabel, Derek, kind of say he's not ready. He's not ready, but he's got the summer to work on it. I wonder if they're trying to light a fire under him to sort of say, look, we're not going to hand you this job at left guard, because that was the thing that our guest said, is that he likes him on the left side.
Because exactly.
The question is always guard or tackle with him. He's played tackle. But he said, you know what, left side more than right side. So I can see a scenario where he could be the answer at left guard. But do you think that's the ideal thing? Like, that would be great. If you could wave a magic wand from the salary cap, and I tell you, okay, I'm going to give you certainty. Dylan Raidens is going to take that job at left guard. You keep Luan at left tackle. You have a little more money to play with if you want to keep Ben Jones, something like that. That's the ideal scenario to me. That Raidens jumps up and he says, I am an NFL offensive lineman. I'm ready to start. I'm taking that job.
Well, if you're reading between, you know, the lines, or you're reading a tea leaf, so to speak, with what Mike Vrabel said, that he's not ready yet. He don't feel that he's ready yet. But that didn't stop them from potentially now releasing Roger Saffold.
Yeah.
They said he's not ready yet, but they have a whole offseason and then a preseason to get him ready. They will bring in someone else, another guard.
You got to have a plan B.
They're going to either draft a guard, they're going to bring in someone as a backup potentially. But I think in their mind, the organization's mind, they believe that come first game of the season, Dylan Raidens will be ready. That's why they are so quickly, they're so ready to move on from Roger Saffold. If they were not sure, like truly deep down sure about Dylan Raidens, they still had a little time before they release Roger Saffold. Because whether they do it now, I believe, or, you know, after June or whatnot, the cap hit is still around the same, you know. So they would have had a lot of time to kind of, you know, let's figure out this guy's the guy for real. But by releasing him, they get money up under the cap. Now they can go into the draft and say, hey, listen, we have a guy in-house, but we also need to draft a guy as well or need to bring in a free agent. So I think their hopes is Dylan Raidens does progress as a player, and he is the starting left guard. Right now they have him probably penciled in as the starting left guard. But as you know, with pencils, they can be erased.
Right, you gotta have a backup.
Exactly.
You gotta have insurance.
Absolutely.
Right?
So they haven't inked them in yet, but I want to believe they think that he can be the heir apparent to Roger Saffold and be, you know, along with Taylor Lewan. But then they, you know, they got to figure out the center position.
Right, and so
and we talked about whether they sign Ben Jones back or not. They got to figure it out.
They save, according to what I've read there on the ticker, about $10.1 million against the cap in cutting Saffold. Which sounds great. Hey, $10 million, that's great.
Uh-huh.
But they got plenty of uses for that money. And that's one of them. Is what happens with Ben Jones?
Mm-hmm.
Another one I wonder about is Zach Cunningham, who has a big cap hit. He's an excellent player, but we talked about it before. He's not a three-down linebacker. He's as good as it gets first down and second down. When it runs situations, not ideally out on the field for third down.
Mm-hmm.
Inside linebacker at his cap level, can they live with that? Can they work that in, or is that something that's got to be reworked for him to stay ideally?
They're going to have to.
Because there's
Jenkins
is another one everybody's talking about that won't be back. So I'm just looking for what other moves are we going to see here in the coming days. If they start to inform Saffold, then you have to think that other people that they've decided they can't have at their current deal, they've got to be talking to them right now. I would think it's only a matter of time before more stuff like that starts coming out.
Well, right now his cap hit is 10.5. He's scheduled to make
this is 10. Zach.
Zach.
Right?
He's
Zach
scheduled
Cunningham.
To make 10, and he has a roster bonus of 500,000. So they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do with Zach. Can they rework a deal where it lowers his cap and he still gets some of the money? I don't know. Or maybe they just want to go another route.
That was a great point by Chris Mortensen about the whole principle of turning it into cash, pushing the pile back like a credit card. They could do that with Zach Cunningham, but that means you're going to have to address it again down the road with the big chunk of money. An inside linebacker, what do they have of guys coming up through the system that feel like they could get by with those? I feel like they want him ideally, but I just wonder if they can have it at that price that you said, over $10 million.
Because Rashad Evans will be gone.
He's going to be gone.
And they got Jayon Brown. Is he still under contract? Free agent. And then they got some guys that are...
Monty Rice.
Yes. Just, I mean, Monty Rice,
Long.
Yes.
We know David Long.
David Long is a good player.
He's in there. Yeah, he's a good player. There. He's the man.
But he's on the outside. We're talking about inside backers. Well, he is,
well, he is in their
he's
system.
He's a left inside backer.
But
yes,
he's mobile. Exactly. He's a guy that's going to be in there covering people.
But he's more so of a three-down linebacker.
Yes.
Zach, for whatever reason, they don't deem him as a three-down linebacker. Now things can change. You know, they can find a way to work it out, and he becomes a three-down linebacker. But as you sit now with the cap hit at 10-5, you know, are you going to pay him that much to be a first and second down linebacker?
I think that's a fair question to ask for sure at that position.
Not, I'm not saying anything about his ability to play the game. I think Zach's a really good player, but he's a really good player two downs, and then that third down he becomes a player.
Yeah, 100%. All right, when we come back, we'll continue to set the table. We'll have John Clayton at 12:30. Here's a quick word about Loan Pronto. Your home's value is way up. You can use that money now to pay off credit cards or remodel your house, or you can do a little combination of both things. Just call my guys at Loan Pronto. They can convert that home's equity into cash in as little as 2 weeks with no cost to you. Zero hassle. Lots of people doing this. I've told you a lot about some of the different things you can do when you get that check for home equity. You can address whatever needs you have. If it's college tuition, if it's credit card bills, if it's to consolidate other loans, if it's a car loan, you can get that cash now and deal with those payments that you need to make. Then take the other part of it and reinvest in your home. With the home value up, make it even more valuable. Upgrade a bathroom, a kitchen, a patio, whatever it is that you have been dreaming of, a swimming pool. You can lock in a new APR in the twos through Loan Pronto. They'll pay the closing costs. They'll pay your next two you can skip your next two house payments. How good does that sound? And you're eventually going to lower those monthly bills by hundreds of dollars. So if you haven't done this, what are you waiting on? Call Loan Pronto right now. Convert that home value into cash and put that money to good use for you. 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. That's 615-499-5780. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781. Subject to lender approval, not all loans apply. We're just a few minutes away from talking to John Clayton. Always a guy that you like to bend his ear around this time of year with the offseason move starting. Quick update on the scoreboard. Indiana, desperate, making a run at Michigan. They've cut it to four with 6:27 to go in the second half in the Big Ten tournament second round. Indiana really, really needs to win to have a shot. Also, Syracuse continuing to lead Duke. It's 45-41. Early second half there. The Orange have no prayer of getting into the tournament unless they win the ACC. But
Jim Boeheim
has had some pretty crazy runs in that league. And when they were in the Big East, they've had some pretty miraculous conference tournament runs. So
listen,
we'll see.
Duke lost last week versus North Carolina, so this could be spilling over.
Yes, yes. Duke is interesting. We'll see. We'll see. John Clayton at 12:30, Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock as we continue to set the table here for you. Texas A&M leading Florida down in the SEC tournament, 43-29. Aggies have been dictating things from the start in that game, at least to this point. We'll see if Florida has a run, and they just hit another shot. It's now 45-29. So, Derek, as we've been sort of looking around and seeing what's next here for the Titans. In the meantime, you've got a big game tonight for the Predators. And just reporting what's happened from the morning skate, we are at Bridgestone Arena today. The Predators play the Ducks tonight in a very, very important game. John Hines, no surprise, going with the same lineup tonight. So no changes. which is good news. But the only news that really comes out of that is that Mark Borowiecki, an important defenseman, still is not quite ready health-wise to get back in there. Hopefully it won't be too much longer for him. He's an important guy. But in the meantime, the guy that's been replacing him, Ben Harper, has played pretty well. He had a couple of big hits. I don't know if you saw Ben Harper. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
He sent one guy flying.
I saw that. It was he hit that guy so hard, man. His helmet almost came off. And they replayed it again. I'm like, man, how? And I'm the one to talk. I'm saying, how do you take those hits? But, man, goodness. That guy's what? He's about 6'6"?
Ben Harper is at least 6'5", probably 6'6", I would say.
And the dude he hit was a small guy.
Yeah, yeah. His skates went flying.
That's not fair, man. that ain't fair at all. I mean, you're hitting a guy my size at 6'6", 230 pounds, and you're hitting a guy my size. That's not fair, man.
Yeah, that's tough. So we'll see. You got the Ducks, who once upon a time, the Ducks were a team that had this nasty edge. They were just flat out mean. They were going to try to just bully you all the way through. They've now got this young group of upstarts with a lot of skill and a lot of speed. So this is going to be an interesting adjustment from Dallas kind of team.
They're not in the hunt, are they? The Anaheim, I know they sit at, what, 50-something points right
now? They're up to 63.
63?
So they are right now out on the outside looking in. Nashville at 68, Anaheim 63. Anaheim has actually played more games than the Predators. Okay. So they're on the bubble. Most people thought they wouldn't even be in the discussion at all. So they're sort of ahead of pace. They were awful last year, but they're trying to infuse these young guys in there. And so I think these next few games for Anaheim are really important. They just named a brand new general manager who's got to come in there, Pat Verbeek, who was a great player. And he's got to decide what to do with some of these guys. He's got the young guys he wants to build around. He's got some veterans in the last year of their contract. So it's almost a simpler thing if they drop out of the race. Then it'll be, I think, easier for him to make some moves. But if they were right in the mix, which they could be if they win the next few games, including tonight.
But they're just hanging around.
Predators play them again in Anaheim not too far from now. So there's two meetings between these two teams. One is right after the trade deadline. So that's something I think they're right on the bubble deciding, are we in or are we out? Are we playing for the future?
So what I'm hearing, not necessarily about Anaheim, I don't want to talk about them, but from the Predator standpoint, and I keep hearing this, you know, this is a meaningful game.
Oh, yeah.
Every game from this point on is a meaningful game.
Well, you're right. You're right.
Because they are in this cluster with about three or four teams that, you know, it can go one way or the other. If you go on a win streak here, then you could put yourself in a position where now you're leapfrogging some of these teams because from a point standpoint, you're not that far behind, or you guys are all in the same area. But if you know, on the flip side, if you go on a losing streak, you can put yourself out of it.
Yeah, so you're right. You know, whoever you're playing, it's the biggest game of the
year.
Like, I know people were focused on, and really the Dallas win was so big because it was a 4-point flip in the standings. Instead of, you know, you're down 1-0 with less than 10 minutes to go in the game, and you're looking at being down by 3 points in the standings. All of a sudden, you win, it's a 4-point, you're up by one in the standings because they beat them in regulation. But you're right. I mean, you don't have any time now for the slippage. You've got to stay focused, stay on your game. Anaheim is fighting to stay in the race here. Also, you have, if you take a look, Nashville at 68, Dallas right on their heels at 67. Edmonton, as we mentioned last night, won to go to 66. And so they're on the outside looking in, but only 2 points back. But look above you, too, if you're Nashville and Dallas, for that matter. Minnesota and St. Louis are catchable right now for second and third. So you could find yourself with a little mini win streak back up in second place of the Central. And with a little mini three-game losing streak, you could be out of the playoffs entirely.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of logjam you're talking about here.
Yeah.
So who can be consistent? Who can keep doing their thing from here on out? Still a lot of games left.
Yeah, there is, and I trust the way the Predators are playing from what I've seen the last week and a half, 2 weeks. It started all, you know, when they had that run up the Dollar Stars in Florida and the Winter Classic game. And they played tough games. They went 2 out of 3. They played tough games. But then subsequently after that, but I think that whole little sequence, that whole little 2 weeks, you started to see, you know, this team kick it up a gear. And, you know, like I talked earlier in the show, this is a team that I believe they can win in any fashion. If they need to score goals, they can score goals. If they need to just play defense and win a 2-1 game or 1-0 game, then they're capable of doing that. And teams that are able to play either or are deadly teams, and they are teams that usually last longer, you know, during the season and into the playoffs, because it doesn't matter what type of game they're playing, they still put themselves in a position to win.
And real quick, as we go to the break and then get ready for John Clayton, there is some news on the Ducks front. Ryan Getzlaff and Jakob Silverberg, two holdovers from those tough battles that these two teams used to have for years and years. They've both been placed on injured reserve today. So Vinny Lattery, Danny O'Regan, and Buddy Robinson have been recalled from the AHL. So the Ducks are having a scramble with a couple of veterans unavailable tonight in the lineup. So that is something to take note of. When we come back, John Clayton will talk football with us right here on Darren Donick and Chase, along with D-Mace from Bridgestone Arena on 102.5 The Game. We're back here on the show, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, former NFL great Derek Mason, here with you from Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Ducks coming up tonight right here on 102.5 The Game. Pete Weber, Hal Gill on the call. John Clayton is with us, and man, you always love talking football no matter what's going on with John Clayton, but he is with 710 ESPN Seattle, also does a lot of radio work. He just did some recently over in Denver, so very well connected with the massive trade that took place the other day. In fact, it took place right here, where we're sitting here 2 days ago, Derek, is when it all went down, right about this time of the day. So John Clayton is with us. John, it's great to talk with you again.
Good to be with you, guys.
So, John, let's talk first from the Seattle perspective. Were they happy about the return they got from Russell Wilson?
I mean, they might be. Fans weren't. Because again, you trade Russell Wilson, you're a non-playoff team. You're a 7-6-win team. And that's what they are right now. And they're obviously in the rebuilding phase. And so that didn't go over very well. I mean, so, you know, some fans were happy about it. You know, they wanted them to change, you know, go younger, get a bunch of young guys. But again, I just think that you know, they just sacrificed the season by making this trade.
Was it inevitable that they were just not going to be good enough, even if had they kept him? It's because I think that's what a general manager has to be realistic about, and some wait too long before they come to that conclusion.
No, I thought they were going to be good this year. You know, because 2 years ago they had 12 wins. You know, they have cap room. They just needed to build on the team, and their schedule was relatively easy, except for the teams in the NFC West. Now, I mean, everything is against them.
Yeah, you're right about that. We're talking with John Clayton, NFL insider. Now, John, when the trade came out yesterday, we were on the air, and I equated it to, you know, you as a kid being in a house and you're outside watching everybody play and you can't go out either because you're on punishment or you got to do some homework and you're just watching and you want to be out there. And then finally you get to get your opportunity to be out there and play. I think that's where Denver was. They were in the house watching everybody get their opportunities at a Super Bowl or playoffs, and then they got their quarterback. Now they figure they're in outside playing, so which gives them an opportunity to put themselves in the Super Bowl. Do you see it as that?
I do, and particularly in the AFC. Because I mean, tell me, you've been around for a long time in this league, and have you ever seen a time where you had this many good young quarterbacks? I mean, there's 9 first-round quarterbacks that are starting right now, 6 that have been to the Pro Bowl, and they're all 26 years of age or younger. Have you ever seen this many good young quarterbacks in the league? I never have.
No. Not this many, especially
in
the
AFC.
Yeah.
In the AFC.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So where now that Denver has their quarterback, and obviously they believe now they're in a position where they can make a run at the Super Bowl, what are some other areas you think they need to address now that they have their quarterback?
Well, they have to get a tight end to replace Noah Fant. That's important. They need some help in the defensive line. They got a lot of question marks at inside linebacker. And then, they got to try to make sure that, other than that, I think they're in pretty good shape because it was a good football team that didn't have a good quarterback last year. Had Teddy Bridgewater, who's okay, and had Drew Locke, who was not okay.
Now, yeah, you're
that's
right
one way of saying it, right?
Exactly. Now, looking at what the Indianapolis coach did, I mean, everybody knew that eventually, within the next couple of weeks, they were going to move on from Wentz. I don't think anybody expected Washington to do what they did and taking all of his contract and leaving Indianapolis with a lot of money under the cap. Do you think they just continue to rebuild their team and get a quarterback that is serviceable, or do they try to get their quarterback through the draft? They don't have many picks, so that might be a situation where they may have to wait a couple of years to get their quarterback.
I think they're going to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. Mm-hmm. Now, again, you can say, gee, do you want to trade for a quarterback making that much money who has 16 weeks that needs to recover from shoulder surgery? But think about this. Last year, Frank Reich, got Carson Wentz. First day of practice, he gets hurt. And the next time he practiced was the first practice of the regular season. So at least he knows what to do in a situation like that if, the quarterback's going to be out for a while. I think it's a good fit. And then, we'll see where everybody else goes. But I think Garoppolo goes to the Colts.
Does that make them a better team in your mind, John?
If he can play like he did for the 49ers, yes. Because, Wentz had good numbers, but I guess he wasn't a good leader. I guess he irritated some people. And then, couldn't win the big games at the end.
Talking to John Clayton, talking football with him. So, John, behind the scenes, what's your sense of how close it got between Denver and Aaron Rodgers before they honed in and got Russell Wilson?
I think it was close, because they had to work out a trade. It may have taken a little bit more time, but in the end, it just had to wait it out to see what the Packers were going to do. And the Packers paid Rodgers big, got him Devontae Adams, and so it's like, okay, I'm staying.
Would you be worried if you're the Cardinals that the issues with Kyler Murray are only going to get worse? Or do you think it's just off-season chatter and it will settle down?
No, I think it's going to be – you got to worry a little bit because he wants a deal done by the draft, and I don't know if you can do it. I mean, you tell me, do you pay Kyler Murray over $40 million a year? I don't think he's there yet. He's talented enough, but again, he shows immaturity. And also, they can't finish. So those two things combined, I think they'd like to kind of wait, but he doesn't want to wait.
Now, let's bring it back home here to Nashville. I'm not going to sit here and say, do you think Ryan Tannehill can take the Tennessee Titans to the Super Bowl? Because I think that is all subjective. I think, it's a team game, and if things fall right, then just about any starting quarterback that can throw the football well and read defenses can take a team to the Super Bowl if he have the necessary pieces around him. But with that being said, what do you think the sentiment of Ryan Tannehill is throughout the NFL?
I think he's a good quarterback, maybe not a great quarterback. But, of course, you have to give him credit for going to, three straight playoffs and having a high percentage of completions, all those different things. But I think that what you worry about is there going to be a decline? And that very well could happen. And if there's going to be a decline, with all these good quarterbacks in the AFC, then they'll win the division now. But is that going to be good enough to get him in the playoffs? Probably not.
Do you think it was a miscalculation? I'm not going to say a mistake. Do you think it was a miscalculation by the Tennessee Titans to give Ryan the contract that he has? Because essentially they can't do anything as far as trying to move him this year because of the contract so big.
No. I mean, you got to pay the quarterback. And if you don't pay the quarterback, you lose the quarterback. So I don't have any problem with the contract. Because, again, it's not $40 million. So it's like, that's okay. But no, I'm fine with the contract that they gave him.
John, before we let you go, what's your best sense of what Seattle's plan is at quarterback going forward? Because the minute you trade Russell Wilson, now the search starts for the next guy here. Is it a draft? So tell me what you think the strategy will be.
Well, I think at number 9, they'll take an offensive lineman or a pass rushing defensive end. So that could be it. So that takes them out of the rookie quarterback market. And then, I think, I don't know if it's Gardner Minshew. I don't know if it's going to be signing Marcus Mariota. They'll have to do something because I don't think they can just stick with Drew Locke. So they're on the search now.
Hmm. We'll be watching. John, thanks, as always, for coming on and lending some perspective to us. Very valuable stuff, and we'll talk to you again down the road. Take care.
Okay, sounds good.
Yep. John Clayton, one of the best. Always like talking football with him. What I always like about John, you get to a lot of stuff, and he's got efficient answers on. He's got info on all kinds of stuff. You just keep popping. It's like
it's
a machine.
Precise.
Gun.
It's boom, precise. Boom, 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 boom. He hit him, and it's this or that. It's all within the lines. It's boom, boom, boom. But, I didn't ask him the question about Ryan Tannehill. Is he good enough? I think, can he take him to – everybody's asked that question. I mean, there's,
right.
And
we're not going to know.
And exactly.
The thing is, that's what I think my thing has been all along is he is the quarterback. It doesn't matter whether you think he's good enough. He is your guy.
Uh-huh.
You've got to help him be as good as he can be and hope it's good enough.
And I love what Mort said earlier in the show. He said that even the Rams knew that it was a team game. Eventually, it's a team game. Regardless of who you, it's great if you have that guy. But ultimately, even if you have that guy, if you don't have people around him, i.e., Patrick Mahomes, when they lost the Super Bowl to Tom Brady, he didn't have his team around him. Offensive line was beat up.
Yep.
He was hurt. So no matter who the guy is, you still, in order to win the Super Bowl, you still have to have a team that produces, especially in the playoffs.
When we come back, we'll give you an update on the college basketball scoreboard. There are some big developments, some turn of events going on right now. Plus, we'll have Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock. That is must-listen-to radio when it comes to the NHL. Stay tuned. We've got a lot coming here on the show. We're moving fast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here, Darren Donick and Chase from Bridgestone Arena. Willie Donick and Derek Mason, D-Mace, in the house with us on this afternoon. Beautiful sunny day as we look outside the window. Predators and Ducks tonight. Ducks with some injury issues. A couple of veterans, Ryan Getzlaff, Jakob Silverberg, put on the injured list today. We'll talk to Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock. In the meantime, let's get you up to date on the college basketball scoreboard as the conference tournaments heat up.
Yeah, right,
Derek,
now.
I'll tell you what, it has turned around a full 180. Indiana in the Big Ten tournament, down 13 at the half to Michigan. They come back and win by outscoring them by 18 in the second half. They win it 74-69. So Indiana is still alive on the bubble watch. Michigan gets Juwan Howard back on the bench after the suspension. And they blow it in the second half. That cannot sit with them very well. Although, I do have to say, Derek, I know you're really heartbroken that Michigan has lost.
So heartbroken. You're right.
So, Elijah, I still would say, as we sit here right now, barring a lot of crazy upsets here, I still think Michigan is going to end up in the field. But tell me what you think.
Yeah, Michigan's, I think, pretty much well set in the field because of the amount of quad one wins they have, some of those being on the road, too. I think they were in. Indiana needed another win or two. This one is significant now. If you wanted to talk about how bad Michigan blew it, they were up as much as 17 about halfway through the second half, and Indiana went on a 28-4 run in the last 12:52 of the game, 28-4 to win that game. So I guess the fashion in which they won this game and the fact that they won it definitely bodes well for Indiana. And if they're on the fringe against a team that doesn't have a big win, like a Wake Forest or like a Xavier, they did beat Purdue at home this season and then played them to the buzzer in West Lafayette. So,
and the Big Ten is so tough. I mean, every game is a struggle. So who does Indiana get next?
Indiana will play the one seed Illinois next. Okay, I think so if they win that game, they're basically a lock.
No question about it. No question about it. And I watched them earlier this season. Illinois ran away with it late. It was a good game for a while, but Illinois got a nice win at Indiana earlier in the season. So we'll see what happens in the next one, but the Hoosiers get a big win under Mike Woodson. Elsewhere, Texas A&M continues to hold off Florida. They've jumped ahead early, and they have stayed ahead the entire game. It's 59-49. Aggies, a really good defensive team, and this has really been a defensive struggle. Aggies by 10. This is like the last hope game for both teams. This will end Florida's hopes of getting into the big dance if they cannot make a big comeback here. And Texas A&M just hit a clutch three to go up 62-49. Texas A&M's got a lot of work to do. If they have any hope of getting in, they need to win much more than just today. But this could be a good start for them. Meanwhile, Butler leading Providence 51-48. Butler's the 9 seed in the Big East at 6-14, 14-18 overall. We think of Butler as a great program, but they struggled this year. But they beat Xavier last night, a big upset, and now they're trying to knock off Providence, who's 24-4 on the season, ranked 11th. What's going on? Elijah, you've been saying, though, to me, I know, that you think Providence is sort of overachieved this year.
Yeah, they've definitely overachieved, and I sometimes am cautious to use the word lucky, but when you win as many one-possession games they have, the only team that's won more one-possession games than them this year is Wisconsin. Ironically enough, one of Providence's one-possession wins came against Wisconsin this year. But if you win as many one-possession games as they have and not lost any of them, you're eventually going to fall back down to earth. And they've played with fire against teams like Butler. DePaul had them beat at Providence last month, too. DePaul is a very bad basketball team. A lot of the bad teams in the Big East have been able to play around with Providence, and Providence have to squeak away with really close wins. And a little surprised Butler would beat them. Butler's up 2 right now with 7:59 left, but I'm not surprised if Providence gets bounced early in this tournament just because you keep playing with fire. Eventually, you're going to get burnt, and that's kind of where the Friars see themselves right now.
We'll have a more detailed bubble report for you tomorrow. Toledo has won in the MAC tournament in the quarterfinal. They squeak by 1. Toledo is a contender in that league, but they won 72-71. Upsets do happen. You know who lost last night, D-Mace?
Who was that?
Ricky Pitino and the Iona Gales. Far and away, the dominant team in the Mid-Atlantic got beat last night, so they're out.
Massive upset in that one. Ryder, the 9 seed in that conference, upset Iona. That one was a shocker because Iona was one of those teams that people kind of marked as a potential dangerous upset bid in the NCAA if they got there because of the style of play. Because they hung around with Alabama in the first round last year, and Iona this year played really, really well throughout the season. Beat Alabama, actually, in the rematch in the Orlando tournament in November. So they've won against really good competition this year.
They got no shot in the bubble, do they?
Absolutely not. No, they don't have enough wins outside of that Orlando and tournament. And then their conference this year, obviously, a one-bid league because nobody else is really that good in that conference. But Iona's kind of crashed down the stretch. Their last regular season game, they did lose to Manhattan on the road. And Manhattan's on the bottom end of that conference as well. So
I'm rooting for Monmouth and King Rice and my man Rick Callahan, my assistant coach from back in the day at Vanderbilt. But you remember King Rice playing, right? Right, today? He's been at Monmouth for a long, long time. Uh-huh. He was a Vanderbilt assistant for a long time under Kevin Stallings. So they've got new life now with the lead dog out. That's anybody's race up there. But
they'll be the favorites now.
Yeah. So, D-Mace, I had Iona penciled in on my bubble sheet. You know, you've been looking at this sheet. I got all these colors.
Yes.
But what did you say about when you write it down in pencil?
It's write it down in pencil. You can erase it.
You can erase it. We're going to have to erase. We don't have to commit until Sunday. So that's
exactly.
So Ricky Pitino is done. He is out.
Out.
So, any other scores we need to pass along? I'm looking at the American is underway, East Carolina. That's the early round of that tournament. Cincinnati, well, I don't know what's going on with them this year. They've slipped a little bit there. East Carolina leads Cincinnati 41-40. Texas leads TCU 44-35 in the Big 12 tournament. Two tourney-bound teams there for sure. And remember what we were saying, keep an eye on the A-10 tournament. That's underway now. Fordham up on George Mason, 50-49. And here's the last one we'll mention. Duke is now pulled ahead of Syracuse. They really had been struggling. Syracuse led for most of the way up until the last couple of minutes. I don't know if you're watching that one, Elijah, but Duke now up, last check, 72-67.
Yeah, 72-67, 6.5 minutes left. Duke went about half this game without hitting a three. And, of course, when Syracuse plays that 2-3 zone, they kind of encourage you to shoot a bunch of threes. Duke missed about 11 in a row for a stretch in which Syracuse went on a 20-6 run. And that's kind of what gave Syracuse the lead. Now you're seeing a lot of Duke slowing it down a little bit and kind of posting up Syracuse. He doesn't really have a – they don't really have a – solid big man, so to speak. And ever since they've kind of taken advantage of that mismatch, they've taken the lead back and kind of expect them to be cruising after this. I know it's a 5-point game, but a lot can happen.
How many games over the years do you see Syracuse in the postseason just with that zone? Sometimes they just
catch games.
Yes, it does. You can go cold out there. Vanderbilt will play Alabama tonight in the SEC tournament down in Tampa. That's a 7 o'clock start. You can hear it on 93.3 with Kevin Ingram and Tim Thompson. And our man Chip Walters will be on the call as Middle Tennessee is taking part in the Conference USA tournament tonight. They take on UTEP. So that's a game coming up at 8 o'clock out at Frisco, Texas. When we come back, it'll be time to talk to Elliot Friedman. A big, big session with him as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline. Predators and Ducks tonight. Stay tuned. We've got more coming here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.